We're going to be here on the bottom of Tzadi Chedem Adbed by the Gemara. The writer says, Don Rabbanan, Amr Lahen, Ve'amru Lo. If he told them that if they find something, they should put him, include him in that. And they tell him, also, if you find it, include us in that. Ochel min arishon. Then they eat from whichever one was shechted first. Lo Amr Lahen, Ve'lo Amru Lo. If he didn't explicitly make them into agents for him, and they did not explicitly make him into an agent for them, they have no responsibilities one to the other, and each one, you're on your own. Everybody takes care of themselves. So over here, because they ran into the problem of the Korban Pesach disappearing, but because they did not appoint explicitly either one of them as an agent for the other, they have a lot more latitude, which is that everyone's for themselves. And doesn't really matter which one gets shechted first because you take care of yourself. Mikan amru chachamim. From this the chachamim concluded, yafesh tika le chachamim. Silence is good for the chachamim. Kal v'chomer l'tipshim. Certainly to those that are fools. Shenemar. As the pasuk says in Mishlei, gam evil macharish. Also the fool who is silent. Chacham yechashev. We thought a wise man. And the remainder of the pasuk repeats a very similar type of idea. So this is some of the common idioms that silence is golden, or better to be silent and be thought a fool than to speak up and remove any doubt about it. So those types of expressions about silence, there is no reason to get yourself into trouble by speaking. And that's what happens over here. If they don't appoint each other agents, then they're in a better situation. If they say nothing and everybody goes their way, then we don't run into a problem. We end up with each party having a Korban Pesach and no issue at all. On the other hand, if they speak up and they start making each other into agents and so on and so forth, they end up in a problem not knowing which Pesach goes first, who was out there first, what happened. You create all sorts of complications. The idea being that sometimes it's better not to overspeak or speak at all. Alright, Shnayim Shnitarvu Pizcheyim. Two people who have their Pesach mixed up, then the Mishnah says with regards to those individuals, they each take an additional party to join them on the Chabura, and then they swap. Either psachim or they swap individuals, and then they create a tnai. So my says, lema matnitan kelo ke Rabbi Yehuda. Maybe our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanya. We have a brighter. V'imi mata bait miot miseh. If the household is not enough to be on a seh, again, that's the way we interpret it. That's probably the Pashtut Pasuk. Earlier on, we saw in the Masechta, Rashi says that means that if they don't have sufficient funds to purchase a seh, then they bring other people into the party. Lame, shemit ma'atim vechokhim. From imat, they're dashing that you can reduce the number of people on the chabura. Buvad sheyachad mibnei chabura kayam. As long as one of the party are still on the Korban Pesach, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Biosumer uvad shlo yenichu at the Pesach kamochu. As long as they don't leave the Pesach the way it is. The difference between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi is whether you need a party on the Korban Pesach from the original chabura. Rabbi Yehuda says you need one member of the original chabura to still be a party to the Korban Pesach when it finally gets shechted. You can pull everybody off of it, you can put all new people on it, as long as there's one individual still a party from the original Chabura. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi says that you can reduce it down to one person, and it doesn't matter if they're original party or not original party, as long as there's one member still on the Korban Pesach, you're fine. You can't leave the Korban Pesach without Baalim or ownerless. So the reasons why, or the reasons behind their positions are because you can't leave a Korban Pesach shelo yimenu yav. That it cannot be for those individuals that are not appointed to it. If you leave it without balut, it's shelo yimenu yav anymore. There's nobody there that is a party or a baal to the Korban Pesach. And why you need somebody from the original group versus not from the original group has to do with whether you believe when we say here, vim atabayit miot miseh, that the mima atim is that modifying the original group, or is that just modifying whoever's on the, or party to the Korban HaPesach? So if Yehuda believes it's modifying the original group, therefore there must be one individual remaining from the original group. Whereas Rabbi Yossi says that as long as there's a party to the Korban Pesach, we don't worry about it. Our Mishnah, which allows when you have two individuals, each own the Korban Pesach and then they got confused, they each take a second individual onto their Korban HaPesach and they say, wherever my Korban Pesach is, you are joining on my Chabura. Then they swap the individuals, and then they make a Tanai, which says that if this is my Korban HaPesach, then this is mine and you can join me. Or, if this is not my Korban HaPesach, then it's yours, and I'm going to join you. And I'll relinquish control of mine to the other individuals. So by doing that, you make sure that it's never ownerless. What you do not make sure is that there's a person from the original Chabura that is party to this Korban HaPesach. Because the original owner, it has one of two possibilities. Or either it is his Korban HaPesach and he's on it, so they're fine. Or the other possibility is it's not his Korban HaPesach, and now he's moving off of that onto the new Korban HaPesach. That means his Pesach doesn't have anybody from the original Chabura on it. So when it says that maybe our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda for that reason. So I'm Rabbi Yochanan, afilu teimer Rabbi Yehuda. You can even say that it's Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, and we saw this earlier in the Masechta, that Rabbi Yehuda believes that you can only have a party of a minimum of two on a Korban HaPesach. You cannot have one person on a Korban Pesach. Lo tuchal lechol be'echad she'arecha. There they dash in the Pasuk, lo tuchal lechol be'echad. You can't eat it with one individual on it. You can't have a single party to a Korban Pesach. You have to have multiple people on the Korban HaPesach. So by definition, this individual who was an owner, a single owner of the Korban HaPesach, he could not remain that way. So that means that he's really not defined as the original party. Because by definition, he has to take on a second person to make this a kosher Korban Pesach. If he simply remains the way he is, he doesn't have a kosher Korban Pesach, according to Rabbi Yehuda, because he has a minimum of two that need to be on the Korban HaPesach. Therefore, he says, it's waiting for the next person to be joined the party. And therefore, that second individual is considered to be a party to the original group on the Korban HaPesach. Since Rabbi Yehuda says the minimum number of people on a Korban HaPesach is two, then by definition, if you have one person on there, you're going to have a second person. That second person becomes party to the original group because there's no Korban HaPesach without that individual. And so by when you bring on the second individual, it's still to the, they're a part of the original party, and therefore when they swap out the Korban HaPesach, or when they swap, then even when they switch, the first two individuals are still party to the original Korban HaPesach. Amar Rav Ashi, Matznita Nami Daiko, our Mishnah is Miduyak, like Rabbi Yehuda, Diktani. Because it says in the Mishnah, V'chein Chamesh Chaburot Shel Chamisha Chamisha. So if you have five groups of five individuals, so the Mishnah says there that basically what you do is you divide up, and one person from each group then gets together, and you have five groups consisting of one individual from each of the separate five groups. And then you split up the Korban HaPesach, and they do Al-Tanai. They figure out whose it is, but Al-Tanai, they say whoever it belongs to will become the owner, and everybody else will join him on the Korban HaPesach. So Rashi says here, that's Meduyak, because it says, Chamisha in Abashel Chamisha Barba Lo. Our Mishnah says that it's a five groups of five. How come it doesn't say it's five groups of four of them are five, and one of them is four? It's obvious why the Mishnah doesn't say that, because a group of four won't help you, because you have five Korban HaPesach. So you need the same number of individuals on each Chabura to match the number of Korban HaPesach to split them up into the different groups. But the truth is that had you had four individuals there, what you could have done was add an additional person from the shul and then make it into a group of five. So even if you had five Korban HaPesach and four individuals on each Korban HaPesach, all you had to do was pull another person into each Korban HaPesach, and that would make them five, five, and five, and then they could divide it up and make it one individual from each group be a party to the, each of the Korban HaPesach. So why didn't the Mishnah do this? Because the only reason you wouldn't do that is because then if you only have four individuals and then you add a fifth party in the end, then there's a possibility you end up with a Korban Pesach who doesn't have someone from the original group on it. And that would support Rabbi Yehuda's position, Shemamina, because now Rabbi Yehuda has support from the Mishnah on the fact that it only gave a case where there were five individuals on each Korban Pesach, not when there were four individuals on five different Korban Pesach, and you add somebody in because you can't add someone in. Oh, what about before you could add somebody in? When you had the one party and one party, that's because that's Rabbi Yehuda, the Shita To, that you can't have a single party to a Korban Pesach. Since you have a single individual on a Korban Pesach, you must have a minimum of two. Two makes the first Chabura. The first Chabura is not done until you get a minimum of two people on there. So if it's only one individual on the Korban Pesach, you can add someone else and they become a party to the original Chabura. But once you have already four individuals on the Korban Pesach, then adding a fifth does not make him a party to the original Chabura. And therefore, if everybody drops off, and now you have a new individual on there, that doesn't help you because you don't have someone from the original Chabura. And that's why the Mishnah has been duyeked, that it uses five as the number of parties to each Korban Pesach, and not four. So that's what Rav Ashi says. Our Mishnah is actually Meduyak, actually supports Rabbi Yehuda's position rather than being a problem for Rabbi Yehuda. All right, now we move on to the 10th Perek. This is where many of the yeshivot rejoin Masechet Pesachim. All right, Arvei Pesachim. or Erev Pesachim. As a question as to the Girsa here, Tosafot himself raises the issue and says that either one is okay. Either means Arvei Pesachim, which is the evenings of Pesach, referring to overtime, or it's Erev Pesachim. Erev Pesachim is either referring to Pesach Rishon, Pesach Sheni, or Erev Pesachim is talking about on that Erev, everybody's Korban of Pesach. Different ways to read it, he says either Girsa works, whether it's Erev Pesachim or Arvei Pesachim. Over here, the Mishnah is going to begin or deal with the issues of night, as we discussed before, that the Masechta moves in a chronological order through the events or things that happen beginning on the night of the 14th through the night of the 15th, which is the culmination of the Korban HaPesach and the Seder night, which is the highlight of the Pesach and Chag HaMatzot. They can converge on the night, the first night. And so this is Arvei Pesachim is describing that night and what happens at that night. The interesting thing about Erev Pesachim, I'm just going to mention this as an introductory point, which is the Arvei Pesachim lays out in it a procedure for eating on that night. A procedure for eating both in terms of not eating beforehand, then Heseba, leaning on that night, then in addition to that, washing twice in the meal, having the vegetable early on and a vegetable later on, which to us seems all very strange. And it seems almost like it's put in place, like we say today, Kedei Shishala Tinokot, that the children want to ask about it. But the truth is that if you move to the Tosefta in Masechet Brachot, the Tosefta Masechet Brachot actually lays out, it says, Ketzed Seder Seuda. And also has the Tosefta there, Ketzed Seder Haseba. And the Tosefta lays out what is otherwise known as etiquette, or the proper etiquette for eating in their time. Now, it is a proper etiquette for the aristocracy, which will make a difference, and that's why I'm giving you this introduction, because I'll mention it again later as we go through the Mishnah. At the aristocracy of that time, this is the way they eat, and this was the proper etiquette. And that which we find here in the Mishnayot, of Arvei Pesachim, is not unusual, but actually right, spot on with the etiquette of that time. And it was nothing unusual. The only thing that was unusual, as we're going to see in our Mishnah, was that it wasn't the practice of everybody, because you had to have two things in order to actually be able to do this. One is that you had to have a lot of space, because in order to do Haseba and to lay out the beds, in order to eat in with couches and so on and so forth, you needed a large room to facilitate that, a large table and a large room to facilitate that. That's number one. And number two is, in order to have all these pieces of etiquette come together, again, you had to be wealthy enough to afford all the different pieces of the puzzle, plus have someone serve it to you, and so on and so forth. So it was definitely the purview of the aristocracy, but it was something that was common and something that did happen in their day on a regular basis for those people that had the ability to eat in that way, had, again, the means as well as the space in order to facilitate it. So that's number one part of the introduction. I'll give you the second half of this introduction as we read through the Mishnah, which is Erev Pesachim Samuch LeMincha. When Erev Pesach close to Mincha, the Mincha we're speaking about here is Mincha Kitana, not Mincha Gdola. Mincha Gdola starts at 12:30. We're talking about on a perfect day. On an equinox, then the Mincha Kitana starts at 3:30 on the day. So now, Samuch to Mincha, close to Mincha is a half an hour before that. So that would be about 3 o'clock on a normal day. Lo Yuchal Adam Ad Shetachshach. That person is not allowed to eat from that moment forward until nightfall. Afilu ani shebi Yisrael. Even a poor person amongst Klal Yisrael, lo yochal ad sheyishev. Already Tosafot says that it's not clear here which way the Mishnah parses. You could read it this way, which is lo yochal adam ad sheyishev. You may not eat until nightfall. Afilu ani shebi Yisrael. Even a poor person amongst Klal Yisrael. So even a person who hasn't eaten for a number of days is hungry. He should not eat until nightfall. That's one way to read the Mishnah. Or the other way to read the Mishnah is lo yochal adam ad sheyishev until nightfall, and then pause. Even a poor person amongst Klal Yisrael should not eat until he reclines. Truth is, it might be both, which is that Afilush Ani Yisrael modifies the whole Mishnah. But you know that it's not clear how to read it because of Tosafot mentions that the Afilush Ani Yisrael can be modifying either the first half or the second half of the Mishnah. Now, what exactly this means that you may not eat until Tachshach? Tosafot asks the obvious question, the same question we're faced with every year on Erev Pesach in the afternoon is, what can you eat? What exactly is the Mishnah precluding that you could eat? He says, obviously, chametz is out because it's an Isur chametz. Matzah is out because of the Yerushalmi, which says, the Yerushalmi tells us that with regards to matzah on Erev Pesach, anybody who eats matzah on Erev Pesach, ke'ilu bo'el arusato bebet chamiv, it's considered to be completely inappropriate to eat matzah. The minhagim of doing it before that are all minhagim. But the Yerushalmi brings down that it's unacceptable to eat matzah on Erev HaPesach. There is a machloket in Rishonim, but that only applies in the afternoon, if it applies also in the morning. But certainly, by Zemuch LeMincha, everybody agrees that you cannot eat matzah. So then, what are you left over to eat? You're talking about Minei Targima, fruits, and those items? We're going to see later on in the Masechta that you're supposed to eat those, because they increase your appetite, they are good. So it says, I don't know what the Mishnah is saying, you may not eat. So Rabbeinu Tam L'Shitato says, I'll tell you what the Mishnah is saying, don't eat matzah ashira. You can't eat matzah ashira. Don't fill yourself up on matzah ashira. Matzah ashira being things like possibly egg matzot and fruit juice matzah that you may not fill yourself up on, because the Rabbeinu Tam believes that you could eat matzah ashira on Erev HaPesach. Again, we don't have that minhag because of Rashi. We don't eat those items on Erev HaPesach and on Pesach itself. Whereas Rabbeinu Tam L'Shitato says you can eat those items. So he says when the Mishnah here comes to be oser, what you can't eat, is based on what you could eat, which is the matzah shira. And so we don't want you filling yourself up on matzah shira on Erev Pesach towards the afternoon, because we want you to come into the Seder bit te'avon, come in feeling with a sense of appetite and excitement about what you're going to eat at that time. That's why Rashbam points out here, k'reishi yochal matzah shel mitzvah de te'avon, mishum hider mitzvah. And you should eat the matzah shel mitzvah with a appetite and excitement, because that's hider mitzvah. A hider mitzvah is an extension of the mitzvah in beautifying, making the mitzvah more exciting and better. It's because you come in there with an excitement about it because you want to eat it, not like it's a burden or just an afterthought in what you eat. Right now, we said here, afilu aniv she'el lo yochal ad she'yisev, if that's what you parse it, that afilu benisho has to lean and do a seba. He should have no less than 4 cups of wine. Even if he has to take it from the donation plate. Now, as Tosfos points out, the language there, lo yifchatu lo, indicates that we're not speaking about the ani himself, but rather about the gabay tzedaka. The gabay tzedaka is obligated to ensure that the ani has his minimum of 4 cups. And that's why it says lo yifchatu in plural. Now, you could have tried to read it at, lo yifchatu means all aniyim. But then it should have said, lo yifchatu lahem. And it shouldn't say lo, because here yifchatu seems like the gabay tzedakah is facing the ani. And also, you can't say, lo yifchatu lo arba kosot. You could have read it means all aniyim, but then it would leave out the mem. So now, the fact that it says, lo yifchatu lo, may arba kosot, indicates that we're talking about the gabay tzedakah's obligation to ensure that the ani has 4 cups of wine. Afilu mina tamchoi, again, even if he has to get it from the tamchoi, from the donation plate. And we have the aloha that's brought down, has to do with all these dinei derabanan that involve persume niso. The Rashbam quotes it over here. He says, if the gabay tzedakah does not give it to him, imkoret mal busho, he has to sell his clothing, or yileveh, or he has to borrow, or he has to skir it atzmo, he has to rent himself out, bisho yayin arba kosot. The obligation is on the gabay to provide it. But if the gabay does not provide it, then the ani himself must do whatever's in his power to ensure that he has the arba kosot. It applies to the dinim that involve persume nisa, including things like Nerot Chanukah have that same din with regards to an ani. Things that are dirabanan and involve persume nisa, there we obligate the ani not only to get it from the gabay tzedakah, but if he's unable to access it or to procure it from the gabay tzedakah, he has to then take it on his own and he has to sell his possessions in order to do that. That's how significant it is. Now, what's interesting here, and this is what I wanted to come back to here, which is Tosfot over here says, what's the havamina that you shouldn't do it b'haseba? Why should it be that you don't do haseba over here? What does it mean? Afilu anisha b'Yisrael. Even Israel has to eat b'haseba. Wait, don't you have this din of derech herut? It has to be done derech herut. It has to be done derech herut. Why is the ani not obligated? So Tosfot says over here, there is a havamina over here, that maybe by ani, the sakadatva, the sebat ani, lo chashiva haseba. That the leaning of an ani is not considered a seba, because the emel ma'ad lehesef. He doesn't have on what to lean. Vein's a derech herut. For him, it's not derech herut, because he just doesn't have the props, he doesn't have the space in order to do a seba. So therefore, it would be a question or possibility that maybe a seba does not apply to the ani. Now, this I wanted to go back to the introduction, which is that what we find here in this perek is that all the things that are laid out is a meal of the aristocracy. Now, obviously, the meal of the aristocracy is mentioned here is because this is the night of Chirut, that a person acts like a free man, but a free man that is of wealth, that person that is, acts with the means of someone who is left Mitzrayim, is gone out, Kiluhu Yatzah Mitzrayim, their Chirut is celebrating like a man of the aristocracy. The problem is that the Ani can't do that. The Ani doesn't have the ability to do exactly that. And so I heard from Rav Meir Lichtenstein that he wanted to suggest, and it seems that it works from the way the Mishnah is laid out, as well as what Tosva just said, is that the obligation of the Gabay Tzedakah here is not simply to provide the four kosot for the Ani. The obligation of the Gabay Tzedakah is to provide for the Ani the ability to have Derech Chirut. Arba Kosot is just one of those manifestations of the Derech Chirut. What's included in that is also the Hesed, the ability for the Ani to be Mesev. Whether that means that they provide him the couches, the props to do it, or a location where he can do it, they need to help him so that he can do the Aseba. In his circumstances as he is today, he can't do it. He doesn't have the space, he doesn't have the couches, whatever it is that they did Aseba on, he doesn't have any of that. So to say to him, here's your four kosot, do Aseba, he doesn't have that ability. It's not within his means to do it. So in order to provide those means, it's not simply the Arba Kosot. The Arba Kosot are just a symbol of all that's needed for the Ani to participate. And therefore, it's a broader necessity that we're providing for, is to make the Ani basically have the ability to act like someone of the aristocracy and the etiquette of the aristocracy on that night. To behave in a such a manner where he does a seba, and in a manner where he has four kosot yayin, and a manner as goes on in the Mishnayot, where he has appetizers, where they wash twice. All the things that are going on in this is the normal way that they ate for the aristocracy, but not for the Ani. Or even maybe the layperson. And what's being described in the Mishnah is that everybody is going to act this way tonight. And those that don't have the means, we have to provide them the means in order to do it on this night. Now, what's interesting is that there is a transition in this over time, which is that at one point in time, the Haseba and everything described in the Mishnah is clearly what is transpiring around them. It's a part of the etiquette of the time. And therefore, when you see it, nobody thinks of it as unusual, but rather thinks of it as acting derech chirut. Over a certain period of time, that changes. And that this is no longer the etiquette anymore. And to do a seba is no longer something like, oh, we're acting like the aristocracy. We're actually acting a little strange when we do a seba. Already we know from the time of the Rishonim, already Tosafot in the Gemara and Brachot already says that yeshiva shelanu keseba shelahem. Are sitting at the table on chairs is the equivalent of their haseba.
That's a normal way of eating.
Right, that's the normal way that you would eat. In their day, haseba was what joined people together in a meal. Over here, yeshiva for us means brings people together in a meal. That's why there are reasons to sit down for Abdullah, sit down for Kiddush, all these items, because that's what joins parties together, is sitting down at the same table. That yeshiva now takes over the place of haseba. Now, because of that, that really changes the dynamic of haseba in the Mishnah or on the night of the Seder. One of those is the Rav Yoh already suggests that if a person doesn't lean anymore, doesn't do a Seba, it's not Me'akev. As opposed, he says that was true in their time. Today, a Seba is no longer an integral part of the Seder because that's just not the way that we act. And therefore, the Rav Yoh says that a Seba is not Me'akev. Now, we still say it is Me'akev, but anytime you need a Kuva, they always bring the Rav Yoh together with some other thing. If you have another reason to be Mekyo plus the Rav Yoh, we'll always put them together in terms of a Seba because of that Rav Yoh. But what happens at that point in time is that there's a transition with the view towards a Seba, and that is that a Seba no longer becomes an issue of acting derech chirut or like an aristocracy, but rather it becomes one of the things, kadesh yishala tinokot. Because one of the things that the children would ask, a lot of these items that were normal procedures, normal etiquette in their day, change from being actions that make us act like derech chirut into kadesh yishala tinokot, so that the children ask this strange behavior, including having the appetizer with the vegetables, washing one hand for the vegetables, all these additional items that in their day were so normal, to us are strange, it shifts. And that's what happens in the Manishnana as well. The fact that we don't, the Manishnana that's found in the Mishnah, which includes Korban HaPesach, we swap that out, and we add in an item that in their day would have been considered totally normal. And why you wouldn't say, about this item, because It was so obvious why that was a part of the night of the Seder. For us, where it's considered to be out of place, that's why we added into the Manishtana. So there is a shift. The Mishnayot and what we're doing in the Gemara, they're talking about a certain etiquette of the time, and it's not strange behavior. It's normal behavior, of someone who is B'derech Elut or part of the aristocracy. For us, when we look at it, and the Rishonim already, in the time of Tosafot, clearly, but even probably before Tosafot, there's already a shift of the view of looking at these items as not being items that are normal, but items that are not the normal course, and therefore, it triggers, you know, these ideas of questioning the children, questioning why it's tonight different, why do we do this, so on and so forth, in order to make it an unusual night, to engage the children in the discourse of the night. And it's just, as part of that introduction, why I mentioned the Tosefta, because this idea of the Mishnah here doesn't seem unusual in the eyes of the Mishnah. To us, it seems strange, because it's not the etiquette that, or the procedures that we follow. All right, one more thing. Tosafot over here discusses something. He says something which is extraordinary, controversial, and has a big impact, which is that he says, Lo yifchatu lo me'arba kosot. Lo yifchatu, we say this time at the Gavai Tzedakah, lo means to the Ani. Well, what about the Ani's family? The Ani has children, he has a wife, and the only requirement is that we're providing him arba kosot for him, not for the rest of the parties here. Why? So Tosafot gives two reasons. One reason is, his children are too young, they haven't reached the age of chinuch. His wife, okay, he doesn't need to take care of her, maybe she's not obligated in arba kosot, so on and so forth. Even though later on in the Masechta it seems pretty clear that the women are chayavot in arba kosot, nevertheless he tries to figure out a way to get out of it. But the other answer, which is the more interesting answer, is that he says, well, maybe the balabayit can be motzi, everybody in arba kosot, just like Kiddush. Just like by Kiddush, the balabayit makes Kiddush, and everybody's yotze with the balabayit kiddush. So too, over here, he can drink the four kosot, make the bracha, drink the four kosot, and everybody's yotze with the arba kosot. And one of his proofs is, lo yifchatu lo. The only requirement or demand is that you give the ani the arba kosot, not everybody in his family. So it shows you that the ani is the only one making or doing the arba kosot, and everybody else in the seder is yotze with the arba kosot of the ani. So that is the Balei HaTosafot. The Rambam clearly does not hold that way. The Rambam in Perek Zayin, Halacha Zayin, Milchot HaPesach says, Chol echad v'echad ben anashim ben nashim, every individual chayav lishtot halayla ze arba kosot shel yayin. Not only do they have to have it, they must drink four kosot of yayin. So the Rambam is clear that the shtiyat yayin is an obligation on each individual. From the Tosafot, that's not the case. Tosafot says that you have arba kosot, the Baal Bayit drinks, and everybody is yotzei. So what's the difference between them? So the briskers, the Levi, the Grach, the Griz, they have a Torah about this that describes a machlokadir between Tosafot and the Rambam that extends to a number of items that deal with the arba kosot. Over here, they differentiate between whether you think the arba kosot is a din in shtiyah, in drinking, which the Rambam clearly says, or is it a din in brocha? Is it a din in making the brocha ala kos, which is similar to Kiddush. By Kiddush, the obligation is making the Kiddush al ha-yayin. The shtiyah is just because you made a bari priya gofen, which gives significance to the Kiddush, you have to drink the wine. But the drinking of the wine is only secondary to the real purpose here, which is to make Kiddush al ha-yayin. So Tosafot says, arba kosot look exactly like Kiddush. What's the main factor here? Is to say each part of the Haggadah over yayin. So therefore, what's the key element? Is the bracha al ha-yayin, which is that you said the whole part over a yayin. The shtiyah is only a facilitator here to allow you to do it, alaha yayin. But it's not the ikar. On the other hand, the Rambam views the shtiyah as being integral to the arba kosot. I mean, that is derech cherut. The idea of derech cherut implies that you drink the wine, not that you simply make the bracha and yotze with someone else. You must participate in drinking of the wine in order to have cherut associated with the arba kosot. This relates to, and we won't get it now, a machloket in our Gemara coming up, about what the girsa in the Gemara is if you drink the cups for kosot without diluting them, if you drink them in one shot, not split up. It's a machloket in the girsa between Tosafot and the Rosh and the Rambam. And that machloket might relate to what we're saying over here. When we get there, I'll discuss that. But there are other items that actually deal with this that are relevant, ancillary outcomes of this. The first of which is exactly what we're discussing here. Can the Baal HaBayit do it on behalf of everybody else? Tosafot saying yes. The Rambam saying, obviously, doesn't say explicitly, but it's pretty clear from the Rambam that you cannot. Another din is, How much do you need to drink from the kos? How much and who has to drink from the kos? By a kos of kiddush, the only requirement is that the person who made kiddush takes some little mugmuf. He takes some little mugmuf, then the rest of the parties at the table could help him finish up the kos. He doesn't have to be the sole drinker of the kos. Whereas if you have a din of shkiah by the arba kosot, the obligation will be that each individual drinks their full rove kos, not just some little mugmuf and have a share in that. That's another difference between the Tosafot and the Rambam is, can the Balabai simply drink a Malugav and then share it with the rest of the parties there? And everybody can help him get to the Rov Kos? Or does he himself have to get the Rov Kos? Or, and again, the other side of this is, do you have to then drink individually, each one, your Rov Kos? And that would be another nafka mina between the Tosafot and the Rambam, which they argue about, is whether Malugav is sufficient for the drinking of the Kos here, or is it that you need to drink Rov Kos? Machloket Rambam and Tosafot, based on this same issue. Is the focus on a kosher bracha, that like Kiddush, or is this a different din here in Arba Kosot, which is the drinking of the cup, is what generates or engenders the Derech Cheirut over here. Tosafot later on asks a question from Birkat HaMazon ala Kos, and he asks, wait, if this is the din by Birkat HaMazon ala Kos, how come over here by Pesach we don't have the same din? So it's clear from the Tosafot is that he sees that the Arba Kosot as comparable to a Kos Shel Birkat HaMazon, which is clearly a Kos Shel Bracha. The fact that he allows for those two to be correlated shows you that his whole view of Arba Kosot is a Kos Shel Bracha, like any other Kos Shel Bracha of Kiddush. As the Rambam would never have such a question, it wouldn't even come up as an issue because he doesn't see them as being a Kos Shel Bracha, but rather that the din of Arba Kosot is the drinking of the Kos, the participating in the kos, not simply drinking. It says, again, big nafkamina in terms of whether you can be yotze with someone else's drinking of the arba kosot. It came up in, I think, in World War I, they had a very big shortage of wine. And for the arba kosot, they had a question with regards to whether they could have the balabait, simply have the wine, and be motzi everybody. And obviously, there would be a difference in opinion between the Tosafot and the Rambam. Another difference would be chemar medina. Chemer Medina is allowed to be a replacement for wine when it comes to Kiddush and Koshel Bracha. So if the din is a Koshel Bracha, then Chemer Medina would suffice for the Arba Kosot. On the other hand, if you think that the din is in Yayin and din in Cherut of drinking wine, then Chemer Medina could not fill in for wine. So the same thing here. When there's a shortage of wine, can you use Chemer Medina? Obviously, Tosafot is going to say that we opt for wine when you have a choice between Chemer Medina and wine. He's going to say take wine first. Nobody's going to say otherwise. But in a case where there is no wine, can Chemer Medina replace the wine? According to Tosafot, maybe yes, because it's a Koshel Bracha, the answer would be yes. According to Rambam, it's not a question. Yayin is the din, not a din in Koshel Bracha, it's about drinking the wine. Anyway, it's a very important Tosafot and an important machloket here, because it has many nafkaminot in terms of how we view the halacha of the Arba Kosot. Alright, so now the Gemara moves on. My area, Arba Pesachim. What's so unique about Erev Pesach? Afil Arvei Shabbatot, Varvei Yomim Tovim Nami. This din applies to every Erev Shabbat and every Yom Tov. Tatanya, lo yuchal adam barvei Shabbatot v'yomim tovim min hamincha l'malo, kedei shikenes l'Shabbat shuta avah, divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda says it applies to every Erev Shabbat, every Yom Tov, that you can't eat min hamincha l'malo, so that you come in with an appetite into Shabbat and Yom Tov. Rabbi Yosi Mero, chav alecha chetekshach. Rabbi Yosi says you can keep eating, no problems. You don't have to separate out on Erev Shabbat, on Erev Yom Tov. Now, we already had in the Mishnah in the Gemara and Shabbat about a person not eating some of the mincha over there. But that was for a different reason. That was the reason because we're afraid that you're not going to daven mincha. If a person eats, he's going to get tired, he's going to forget to daven mincha, and he's going to miss out on mincha. So here is a case you could argue that he daven mincha already. Once he davens mincha, then maybe you should be able to eat. So this is a separate din, a din in, coming in with an appetite into Shabbat and into Yom Tov. So that's the question that we are dealing with here. And our Mishnah says, Erev Pesach, uniquely, versus Shabbat and Yom Tov. Tosafot says, I don't know what the question is. We're here, it's Arvei Pesachim. So the Mishnah deals with Erev Pesach. It doesn't deal with Erev Shabbat and Yom Tov because that's just not the Masechta that we're in. So Tosafot says that really, maybe you could answer that, but here it's a new case. Because in Erev Pesach, you would have other reasons to believe why you shouldn't eat, including Matzah. So if you're going to mislead people, then we would say, don't just talk about Erev Pesach. Even though you're right, it's Pesach, and it's Masechet Pesachim, so it's talking about Erev Pesach. But here a person could be misled. Because they could think the reason not to eat on Erev Pesach has to do with Matzah. There are other variables that would make it this way. So because of our Samech the Mincha, not just at Mincha Katana, Gedola, I mean, mincha ketana, but also even beforehand you have to stop. So maybe all of these things are unique to Pesach, and you would not extrapolate them to Erev Shabbat and Erev Yom Tov. The fact that you could be misled with it makes an obligation for the Bala Mishnah to tell you about these other items. So he says that's why the Gemara is asking this. So then, Amar Rav Huna, lo tzricha le Rabbi Yossi. It's a very simple answer. Our Mishnah is for Rabbi Yossi, not for Rabbi Yehuda. According to Rabbi Yehuda, you don't need our Mishnah. It's included under the terms of every other Erev Shabbat, Erev Yom Tov. This is not unique to Pesach. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi, who says that you can eat all the way to Yom Tov and Shabbat, on Erev Pesach, this would be an issue. So, Amar Rav Huna, lo tzricha le Rabbi Yossi. Amar Ochel b'lecha shetefshach. Hani mili bar b'shabbatot b'yomim tovim. That's only true on Erev Shabbat and Erev Yom Tov. Aval be'erev Pesach mishum chiyuva de matzah modeh. That when it comes to Erev Pesach, because of matzah, there he agrees, because of the additional mitzvah of a matzah, he agrees that you have to stop eating earlier. Rav Papa Amar, afilu tamer Rav Yehuda. This even could be according to Rav Yehuda. Hotam barvei shabbatot v'yomim tovim, min ha-mincha olamala udasur. It says in the Braita that we quoted, min ha-mincha olamala, from mincha ketana onwards, which would be 3:30 and onwards. Whereas over here, what does it say? Samuch l'mincha, over there, samuch l'mincha is mutar. There's an additional half an hour pulling back, which is that you start at 3 o'clock and not at 3:30 because it's some of the mincha. So the addition of Erev Pesach is not the full 3 hours, but the half an hour in addition that you start beforehand, which is that on a normal Erev Pesach, Erev Shabbat, Erev Yom Tov, you'd stop at 3:30 eating, whereas here you'd stop at 3 o'clock to eat. Over Erev Shabbat, samuch the mincha is shari. Is that really true? Erev Mincha Pas Shabbat, close to Mincha, is really mutar? That you're differentiating between Samuch to Mincha and Mincha Lamala? Is that really true? Vatanya, we have a brayta that explicitly says that, this din of Samuch to Mincha applies to Erev Shabbat and Erev Yom Tov according to Rabbi Yehuda. And therefore, you don't have that differentiation anymore. Because over here, the Tanya, we have a brayta, Lo Yuchala Adam Erev Shabbat Yom Tovim, Mitesha Sha'ot Ulamala. From the ninth hour and onwards. The ninth hour is 3 o'clock in the afternoon, is Samuch to Mincha. So here you're saying about Erev Shabbat and Erev Yom Tov. Here's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion saying, even by Erev Shabbat and Erev Yom Tov, it's Samuch Lemincha, not Min HaMincha Ketana Ulamala. Rabbi Yossi's opinion is still the same. So that can't be the explanation over here, that the difference is between Samuch Lemincha and Mincha, because even by Erev Shabbat and Erev Yom Tov, we find Samuch Lemincha as being the requirement to the cessation of eating at Samuch Lemincha. I remember Azucha, Man Leimelan Dimitakstahi. Who says the Braita that you just quoted is an authentic Braita? Remember, the problem with Braitos is we have a lot of Braitos floating around. They weren't redacted like the Mishnah. So some of them are Braitos that we can take as being Braitos that are authentic and we can use as proofs. Some of them may not be so clear. So you have to know whether this is a clear Braita or not. Dilma Mishabeshkahi, maybe it's a Braita that got mixed up. Instead of saying Mina Mincha Olamalo, it said Samuch the Mincha, instead of saying Teshashot Vechetzi, said Teisha Shot. Who says this is a good Braita? Amalei Mareimar, V'itemer Rav Yemar, Ana Iklei the Pirkei de Rav Pinchas, Braid de Rav Ami. I was at the Shir of Rav Pinchas, Braid de Rav Ami. Pirkei is usually a Shir on Shabbat before the holidays, which deals with the Lochot of those holidays. And Rav Pinchas Rami, V'kam Tana, V'tana Kamei. And Atana got up and said over this Braita, meaning not Atana in the sense of a real Tana, but someone got up and in front of him put out this Braita, B'kiblo Aminei, and he accepted it as an authentic or a quote-unquote verified Braita, authentic, verified Braita, and therefore, you can't say that. Yehochi Kasha, then if that's the case, then it is a real question, this Braita. Elam Chavarta Kid Rav Huna. And that makes sense. Then we have to go back to Rav Huna's answer, which is that our Mishnah is to deal with the position of Rabbi Yossi. Right, then the Gemara is going to question that. I'm going to stop here. The next section of the Gemara is all about whether Rav Huna is right. Can you really say that Rav Huna makes sense when the positions of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi? Because we're going to find that they have other issues within their position that might alter how we view their positions with regards to Erev Shabbat and Erev Yom Tov. So look, obviously we pass on an Erev Pesach that one must stop eating earlier on because we want to come in with matzav appetite, but the halacha is paskin also in Shulchan Aruch. Right. So then, but the, we also have it with regards to Erev Shabbat and Erev Yom Tov that the Shulchan Aruch brings to the halacha that one should not eat late in the afternoon on Erev Shabbat and Erev Yom Tov in order to enter into Shabbat and Yom Tov b'te avon. The Chatam Sofer does ask about it, that it seems obvious from this Gemara as well as the way you bring down the halacha that the halacha is true by Erev Shabbat. And then they say, okay, also by Erev Yom Tov. Why is it so obvious by Erev Shabbat that there's a cessation of eating and not by Erev Yom Tov? might have to deal with the difference between the two holidays or the necessity to eat on each of them. By Shabbat, the necessity to eat is because of Oneg Shabbat. On Yom Tov, it has to do with Simchat HaYom Tov. So the difference might be, which is, by Shabbat, there's a necessity to get Oneg. The food is less of the issue. The food is just a means to the Oneg. And therefore, if you eat and you don't get Oneg from it, you actually are not Yotze, the din of Oneg. On the other hand, the din by Yom Tov, again, this is not so clear, this is what he says, is that by Yom Tov, the eating is the integral part. The eating, Ein Simcha L'Basar B'Yayin, the Basar B'Yayin, by definition, generates Simcha, and you don't have to worry about the Oneg aspect of it. So even if the eating is done, and it doesn't have produced Oneg, but it has, by definition, it's called Simcha. And therefore, if you eat on Yom Tov, you're going to have Simcha. So that's why it's much more obvious on Shabbat that you'd have to stop eating, because you have to generate Oneg. And Oneg is something that has a feeling that needs to be engendered, and that you need to do by eating, but eating in a way that provides you the Oneg. On Yom Tov already, eating by definition is going to give you Simcha, and so therefore you're Yotze the mitzvah of Simcha, even if you ate later in the day. So that's one difference to note. The other thing is that how come over here we don't worry about the fact that you eat during the Seder? You eat things before the Seder, you're allowed to drink wine during the Seder, you're allowed to eat things before you have the Korban HaPesach during the Seder. We don't worry about him getting all filled up at the Seder. How come all of a sudden in the afternoon we're worried about it, but as soon as it comes to the night of Pesach, we're not worried about it? So Tosafot differentiates between being within the time period or the moment where you're going to be aware, and a person, if he knows he's eating this is the Seder and the Pesach and he's going to eat that night, he measures himself and says, you know, I know, I need this much room, I need to have room at the end to eat this. That you will do. But a person eating in the afternoon, he says, ah, it's a long time to the Seder. I'm not eating till 11 o'clock tonight. What's the big deal? So he eats a big meal, says, by that time, I'm going to be hungry again. It won't be an issue. And he doesn't think properly about how much he eats now and what the impact will be later on. So therefore, we worry about it when it's in a separate meal or a distinct moment. We worry about him overeating or not leaving enough room. Once he's within the moment or the meal, then we don't worry about him overeating before he gets to the item that he needs to eat, b'tei avon. So that'll be the difference between prior to Tech Shach and after Tech Shach, which is when you're already involved in the Seder. Okay, we'll stop over here.